It also means you never start a conversation with talking on politics and things like that. It will mean you, the first words of the conversation, they need to be Dharma. They need to come from the heart, and they connect to the heart of the other person. So I think in your cultures, the various cultures you are coming from, you have the same, and we shouldn't lose that. And we should cultivate that. It's a wonderful way of doing. So when I, after the meditation, when I do like this, I think maybe it's the same meaning for you. I bow down to your Buddha nature and I say thank you to you. Yes, this is why at the end of a meditation I do like this, and in the Buddhist tradition it's very often done like that. So you can give it the meaning you like, but just so that because some of the notes they are asking about these meanings, so I answer to some of the questions that you put. And as Leela so beautifully said, there's a lot of silence between the words and behind the words. So I invite you to come back to the meditation of this morning. There is a lot of silence in the hearing. We can only hear because there is enough silence around. If there's only noise, we cannot hear. The mind can only think because there is enough space, right, to think. If it was crowded, no, but there is space. Mind is of that nature. Hearing has silence, and there is this capacity to be aware all the time. Now this morning, we will call that morning meditation. It was actually a meditation on all appearances are mind. Huh? That would be the title of the morning meditation. And this will be the title also of now what I'm going to teach. And it is sometimes difficult to teach this in a culture like ours, and, you know, all of these European, Greek, and so on, Middle East culture, that there has been so much of a split between mind and matter. The split between mind and matter is enormous, and you might hear when the Buddhist teaching says everything is mind, then you hear like it is not real. Oh no, this is not the meaning. Please, in your notebook, cross out and say, this doesn't mean it's not real. Actually, it means whatever we know about this world, whatever we experience, that which is our world, this is mind. So I'm not saying that my mind has created this war. No, stupid. My mind has not created you. Would also be stupid. No, no, no. My mind creates the way I perceive the war when I touch it, when I hear the sound it gives, when I look at it, this is mind, okay? Not the wall is mind, okay? This is not negating a reality that could be outside the mind, but it is saying that all I know about that reality happens in my mind. The tree which I don't see is not in my mind, right? It's not part of my world. I ignore it. However, I cannot say it's not there because you can bump your head against it. So I'm not going to say because it's not in my mind, it's not in my world, that something doesn't exist. This is very important to understand. Everything that comes to be an experience in our mind, even if it is information coming through computers, this is sensory information. Even if it comes in the digital way, some decoded sounds from the universe, some decoded light waves from the galaxies, you know, all of that, it enters our world by sensory experience. We see it, we hear it, we think about it, we construct our world with that information. That what we think about the outer world, we must admit, although it is quite reliable, still is a hypothesis. It is not the absolute truth. It is that which makes the most sense. For example, most of us, we live in a world of believing things to be solid, you know, like a wall is solid, which is absolutely not the case from the point of view of modern physics. We know that there is particles coming through the galaxy, from the universe. They traverse the whole planet Earth without even being slowed down. Solidity? This is not solidity. There seems to be lots of space. And we know from research, from physics, that the space between the moving subatomic particles is as big as the space between the stars. There's more space than moving fields of energy. It's incredible. The solidity is actually energy. Okay, so much said for our hypothesis of the real world. Fortunately, we can rely on science today to kind of challenge our projection of solidity. We know that it is only true for as much these conditions are not shaken up. When they change drastically, if the temperature rises to 2000 degrees, you know, all of this melts away. Everything becomes lava. Yes? Okay. So, and so on and so on. Circumstances changing, and that seeming solidity is gone. And then where is our world? Where has our world gone? Okay? So here, the Buddhist teaching, that this is fantastic, you know, you cannot imagine the insights of these great meditators of the past. It's incredible, like this Gampopa, one of the Mahamudra masters, how he described the embryonic development without ever doing a dissection, you know, knowing exactly the different stages of how an embryo develops in the womb and so on, describing that in writing. Yeah, I was translating this passage among other texts. And the third Karmapa, for example, feeling so connected in his interbeing that he felt the whole solar system and more, greater part of the galaxy in his own body so precisely that he developed a calendar from that, exactly giving the timings of the days and months, and this calendar is still used today. So precisely he knew from the way the planets were moving in his own sensitivity. So just to tell you, when these masters say that the world, the appearances are mind, they know what they are talking about. They know that we know as much of this world as comes to our awareness. Okay? And this is something very helpful. It does not negate matter. We know that matter is energy. Okay? We know that. It does not negate any outer reality, but it is saying the reality I perceive are those forces that manifest in my mind. What does not manifest in our consciousness is not part of my world. You can think as loud as you want. You can like kind of create shouting thoughts in your mind. Since I don't perceive them, if I don't perceive them, they are not part of my world. Okay? However, if I were to perceive them, then they become part of my world. So depending of what enters my consciousness, my world becomes larger, smaller, includes more and more aspects, includes less aspects, you know. And the practice of meditation, especially if you talk about a bodhisattva path, someone who wishes to be there for the whole world, who offers to be there for the whole world, then the practice includes to open up to more and more worlds of experience. But they have to become a personal experience. So that it doesn't stay outside. There is no such thing as an emotion that I feel that belongs to somebody else. No. It is arising in my mind. So the resonance, when I look into your face, the resonance of what you feel arises in my mind. It becomes an experience in my world. So we deal with it as our own world. We don't create a split within, you know, like my emotion and your emotion, which I can also feel, but that better stays out, you know. Or I take only of what I like. I take your love, but not your anger. You know, no. Everything that we feel is this world that we call mind. Okay, so this mind we cannot find. It's a word. It's a noun in the English language. Substantive noun means seemingly describing something stable. Fortunately, sometimes in English language we also use the verb to mind. Usually we know it in the context mind your own business. Yeah, but minding means to place one's attention somewhere. Yeah, to go with one's awareness somewhere. And I have heard from here, my two sisters, that the language, the Hebrew language now I'm talking about, is similar to Tibetan language in using a lot of verbs. So maybe you can use a verb for mind, which is describing the process. And same in Arab language and whatever other language you might be familiar with, please think of mind as a process. It's minding. It's awaring. It's being aware. Yeah, it's like in German, when I teach the Dharma, I don't talk so much about thoughts. I talk about thinking. Denken instead of Gedanken. Yes, it's like, and this is the process language. So when we want to understand our experience, it's very important that we get away from solidifying words like consciousness. When in English there is ness at the end, it becomes really solid. Yeah, like solidity. It's like, yeah. So you have these endings which make things solid. If you can, in your own way of thinking, if you can, when you observe how it is, if when you make comments about it, for example, there is this Vipassana practice of labeling, then don't say thoughts, but say thinking. Yes? And when you say, instead of saying anger, then maybe you say rather being angry. Yeah? Yeah? Angry thinking or something like this. Yeah? It's like very important that when you observe your own mind, that you're aware that while you're observing it and while you're labeling it, it changes. It continues to be process. It is never anything else but process. So what we call mind is the minding. It's this being aware. And this, that is this continuity. This, then you come closer to understand how the minding process can actually continue even when the so-called mind, when the minding process is not connected to a body anymore at the time of leaving this body. The process just continues, but without creating that connection to this energy field, which we call body, which is also not solid. It will disintegrate the moment it's not inhabited anymore. It's not stimulated, the causes are not there for it to continue, it will disintegrate. It will become what it always was. So this is very important to, when you look, when you investigate mind, to see, oh, that's why I cannot find the mind, because there's only minding, there's only awaring, yes. Being in the flow of experiencing. Yeah, it's like, wow, and this is so important. So when we realize that all of what we call the world is our experiencing, and it is connected to many processes that together make up this ongoing experiencing. So that is the perceiving aspect, that is the feeling aspect, there is the differentiating aspect, there is the creating aspect. This is what the Buddha called sanskaras, you know, the karma. Karma means to be active, to create an effect. And so there is the ongoing process of creation in this minding. Yes, I'm describing all the sub processes. So in this whole process that we would call being aware, now then come in forces interpreting the incoming experiences, interpreting them in the light of our previous experiences. So you will interpret your experiences in the light of your biography, and I will interpret them in the light of my biography, and we come to a different world. Yes, we come to be living, although we share the same room, we come to live all the time. The experiencing continues, influenced by our personal interpretations and so on. Yeah, it continues in such a way that we have as many worlds as we have people and living beings. And they are all mind. And this is a quote from the Buddha. Yeah? All realms of existence are mind. And this famous question also, who has created the hells? Only mind. Yes? The hell realms, the hellish suffering. Yes, who has created this hellish suffering? Who has created psychosis? Who has created depression? Who has created love? It's always the so-called mind, but it is a minding process. It is a way of shaping reality. Yeah? We have in the English, we have what we call the gerundium, these ing forms, yeah? Shaping. To shape is the verb, and the ing form, the ing form, the making, is even more fluid than the to make. Making, in the process of making, in the process of perceiving. And so on. So with these words, the English language underlines the process nature of what is happening. And this is what we need to be very much aware of when we observe our own mind. I come back to normal language now to make it a little bit easier. We need to be really conscious that when we observe our experience, look at this beautiful gap. Can you feel the minding in the gap? Can you feel how your consciousness continues to be aware, that being aware continues in the silence? And this is very important. The mind does not need to change from activity to calm mind and become a different mind. The active mind of listening and talking continues without any discontinuity in the mind of waiting, of just being. And comes back to listening again. So, you know, without to need any need to be told, there is no need for an I, a self, to tell the mind, now please switch on your activity, I need you to think. And now please switch off because I need you to be silent. It happens by itself. It's an incredible thing. So when we begin to investigate minding, we see all these processes. And sometimes no processes except a very basic vivid awareing, yeah, continuing. Something very simple, so simple, as if you were listening to the space between the stars. And then comes a star. And then space. And actually, and now comes the next discovery. First, we have this, here's a thought. Thought. Ooh. Something happening. And then nothing happening. So we make a difference between what is happening, activity, like a word, mother, father. And then each word, each idea has little waves. Ooh, mother, no. Ooh. And then there is, so to speak, silence where there is no thought. And we feel as if there was more space in the silence than in the thinking. This is the first idea the meditator has, that the space is to be found in the on the non-thinking side. Yes? Where does the space go when you listen? So, when you listen now to me, you're thinking. Is that true? You're probably thinking. I mean, how would you understand what I say if you weren't thinking? Does the space go somewhere else? When the sound comes and the understanding happens? If you create a thought for yourself, dog, moon, whatever, the space doesn't change. Somehow, that what we call the contents of awareness, you know, the thoughts, the movements, the impulses, the emotions, you know, all of that doesn't make the space leave. The space doesn't have to go away to give its space to something that is not space. And it's very interesting. In the Mahamudra, one of the important practices is to discover that space within the seeming solidity of thinking, of minding, of sensations, yeah, of all of that. Would you say when a rainbow arises in space, would you say that it takes away from the space? You think it takes away? When the lights from the sun are reflected on little particles, does the light take space? How is that? Does electricity take space? Does energy take space? You have to think, eh? It's clever thoughts, eh? Clever questions. So, you know, I give you a little bit answer already. The space retracts in our experience when we think, because there is clinging to the thinking process. It's the clinging, it's the grasping, the identification which makes the felt space smaller. We feel like everything is narrowing down because there is fixation. But if you allow for thinking, feeling to arise without the clinging, you know, like the cinema we talked about yesterday night, the active mind manifesting, this enormous cinema, the space doesn't become any smaller. It's right there. We call that the empty nature of appearances. Huh? This is what I'm talking about, the ungraspable nature, no substance. And you will, I'm just indicating to you, because I'm bringing to you maybe a new way of looking at reality. So I'm making many pointers right now. Yes, I'm giving you a little help to find the way. But first here, now for us, if you can follow me, that our world, the world we live in, our subjective world, would you agree that this is mind? It is an experience. If you say yes to this world I live in is an experience, then you agree that it is a mind, that this is mind. Yes? So the world I live in is the experience of the world I have. Now, I do project in my mind a seemingly outer world, but this is this seemingly outer world. The way you imagine now Tel Aviv or Beirut or whatever town to be, you know, you don't know if it is still like that. It is your own personal idea. It has probably changed. Details have changed, and maybe big things have changed. When I imagine my home now, my room, my garden, I have my projection about it, but That's not the reality out there. It's the world in which I live. And when I come back, I have to check with my senses, with my eyes, with my senses, I have to check. And then I will have a new representation of what is my room and my garden and so on. Yes, it will. The world continues to evolve with all the sensory impressions, including what I read and hear, the discussions, or everything continuously gives rise to this my own subjective world. And in my subjective world, then the things are like that. And then I'm surprised that in the subjective world of someone else, it's not like that. And that's where friction comes from. Now, if both sides are aware that they are in their own world, and that their world is not something that is reliable because it's fabricated, it's a personal fabrication, it can also be a group fabrication, but it's a fabrication. So no one of the two or the three or the five and so on claims that my world is the right one. Then communication can start. Then the inner fluidity of not clinging to my worldview, to the way of seeing reality by this process that I call me, when this happens, then very fluid communication can happen. Oh, you see it like this, you experience it like that. That's interesting, you know? And then words meet, there's communication, and while they communicate, they change. Because, of course, what I hear from you will influence me. I begin to see a little bit with your eyes, and because you hear how I see the things, you see a little bit with my eyes and with my heart, you know? And like this, worlds are influencing each other, but they are never solid, never. It's just how much we fix on them as being true. And this fixation on my word being true, this the Buddha called view. It's drishti in Sanskrit. It is one of the six root kleshas. Yeah? It is the belief that things are like that and not different. And to be liberated, to awaken, means to become free from any view that the world is like that and only like that. To not hold on to views means to completely enter flexible mind, to be really fluid in the constant co-creation of our worlds. Yeah, this is like we are entering this beautiful understanding that, okay, what I consider my world actually has undergone so many influences and is constantly undergoing so many influences. Am I open to that? Is it okay? Or do I want to hold on with all means? Do I want to hold on to my worldview? And then, of course, the conflict is programmed because it will hit with the worldview of my partner or the people I live together with, the people I share this planet with. Because holding on to me and mine, my world, my worldview, is not in accordance with reality. Reality is fluid. It's the result of so many conditions interacting. It's a conditioned experience of living beings, each one subjectively interpreting what is going on this planet. And anything, anybody who comes there, it is like this and only like that, is going to be in conflict. It's programmed. Cannot be different. The basic teaching on this by the Buddha is that this person imposing his or her worldview is not in tune with impermanence. It's very simple. Whenever someone is not in tune with change, with impermanence, and I'm only talking about that, the whole thing I'm explaining is only impermanence. But if one imposes like something eternally being like this, conflict, because the world is perceived differently by others, the world is changing, there's constant need for adaptation, it never stands still. So an awakened being, and this concords very much with modern psychology, is a being with a supreme degree of flexibility, a supreme degree of this capacity of adaptation, incredibly open to other ways of seeing the world while not believing a single one. Okay? It's all cinema. Yes. Hey, it's all subjective worldview. It's a different way of saying the thing a little bit nicer. You know, it's okay. Subjective way of perceiving the world. If you put it in short words, that means it's my own cinema. And this we need to look through. And now I've only talked about the side which is a little bit, you can say, well, it wakes me up to my delusion, how confused, how ignorant I am, because I have often been fighting over minor issues with other people. I have been a little bit stubborn, yeah, thick-headed, you know, like, okay, I've been this and that, and if I realize, could have done differently. My whole life could have gone much smoother if I had listened a little bit more, if I had been less convinced of my ways of seeing things, then could have been easier. Maybe I wouldn't have had my first divorce. Maybe not even my second. And then, yes, you. It's like this. Maybe my children would have grown up, you know, with a little bit more confidence that I listen to them, but Dad never listens, you know, like this. So this is all about understanding that all appearances are minding, are mind, yes? Whatever we know about the Dharma, the knowing, the understanding is also dynamic. The enlightenment is also dynamic. It's a constant flow of awakened experiencing. It's an experiencing without clinging. The flow, the continuity of being aware continues. However, without all these blockages, all these clingings coming in. So the whole thing becomes more fluid. Since there is no clinging to views, there is much more permeability, much more interchange with the surrounding. All of that is a very beautiful process of being alive in this world. There is no enlightenment which is booked, experienced, and that's it. It's an ongoing experience of enlightened manifestation in this world. Yeah, it's constantly in this interbeing. It is constantly continuing. And it is, and now I come to the very interesting side, it is creative. Now look, the beautiful other side of the coin. One side of the coin is we see our delusion and how much we got stuck so often in our life, in our opinions and so on, in our views, not being aware that it is a very subjective issue. That's the one thing. I think that I'm right, and I see no. Okay. The other side is, now that I understand this, that everything is mind, that's where I have the greatest influence. I want to change the world. How about working with my mind? How about changing the minding process? How about that in this continuity of being aware, now the interest goes, the motivation focuses our attention, our mindfulness in those areas that are really making happy and that create happiness for others. Focusing in those areas that open up to more understanding, that open up to this wise compassion, this compassionate wisdom. Hey, with this understanding that everything is mind, I have at least my world in my hands. I can do something about it. This is the opening door to understanding how I can put an end to suffering. This is exactly where it happens. When I understand that my personal drama is the way that this process of being interprets different sensory phenomena, I can do something about it. And that's where the Buddha says karma, this means creation through thinking, speaking, and physical action. This is what we call the three levels of karma, of creation. This is in my hands, and this is my refuge. Hey, so far it was my prison, and now it is the solution. As long as I wasn't aware that my samsara, my world with all that suffering, was actually continuously being produced by this mind blindly following its habitual patterns, then I was actually suffering. When I understand that this same process of continuously creating the worlds I experience, that this can be used in a skillful way, not going into all that clinging, identification, holding on to views and opinions and so on, but following the real qualities, being and embodying those qualities, letting these qualities give their dynamic expression in this mind, then this same world in which I live becomes nirvana. This is again what I was talking about, I think 2 days ago, 3 days ago, about the identity, the unity of samsara nirvana, because it's mind. And since mind is dynamic, then those who use skillfully the dynamics of being aware, they have their happiness, their freedom in their hands, their mind. Yes? This is so wonderful. This is great. And this is where this famous capacity of sati comes in. Remember the Satipatthana Sutra, where the Buddha says there's only one way, and this is where I took the name of our institute from. There's only one way, ekayana, and this is sati. Sati means how we direct our awareness, where the attention goes. This is the key to awakening. Because the whole experience of suffering is mind and the whole experience of awakening is mind. And the difference is where the awareness goes, where the attention goes. This is the key. Now, this, on the basis of this, what the Satipatthana Sutra says, you know, this is really the key point of that whole teaching. Sati is the key to awakening. There is no other way. And then what directs sati? What is actually the driving force that directs the attention, the mindfulness? You know, the mindfulness of a robber goes into the studying the plans of the bank and how to get in and out without being caught. So that mindfulness is not going to awakening. So what makes it that our mindfulness goes towards awakening? And I heard something whispered here. Was it you? The intention. Yes, behind sati, there is an intention. So now I quote another sutra, but the Mahayana sutra is the famous Lotus Sutra. And the Lotus Sutra, the Buddha says, there is only one way to awakening, ekayana, again, same word, bodhicitta. And this means then the motivation plus the mindfulness. So it is the motivation of compassion, of being open for all sentient beings, plus the insight into reality. That is the key, the one way to awakening. It's only a more thorough explanation of what sati means, because there is, of course, in Abhidhamma, the way then sati is defined, that it must be directed to the wholesome. Otherwise, we won't call it sati, we will call it simply attention. Yes? So when we talk about the sati, the mindfulness of the Dharma, it is always directed towards the liberation and awakening of all. That is the way to take our life into our hands, is by using this mind, this minding process, constantly to go into that which is most helpful. And different moments of our day, we find different aspects more helpful. For example, you were doing before breakfast, you were doing maybe some physical exercises, you were maybe doing some qigong or yoga, and then at that moment you found it most helpful to be with feeling the body. But of course your sati could go into doing the asanas with a lot of love, a lot of compassion for yourself, and even being motivated to keep your body healthy for the benefit of others. So not just body mindfulness, but already bodhicitta with body mindfulness. Yes? And like this, you can use all examples of what we have been doing today. Everywhere you have a motivation which directs your intention. You were choosing your food for breakfast, and you were choosing to the best of your capacity to please this body, to nourish it, and maybe with the intention that it stays healthy for the benefit of all. Yeah, like this. And you do everything like this. I know I'm all. It's okay. You do everything like this, with this wonderful understanding that everything is mind. Continuation later on. Sunam di yi tam jesik bani tam nene pe tanam pan jene kengana ti banam tu paye si pe zule tu awai. It's a Tibetan wish saying, may all beings be liberated from the ocean of suffering, which is, how do you say, which is like stormy with the waves of birth, old age, illness, and death. You know, may they all become free.